11. 11 has stopped. It's his fault, yeah? It's his fault. Okay, guys, please have your seat. Now we can start. Okay, good morning. Today I'm going to talk about network traffic fingerprinting. This is a short version of a talk, a similar talk I played at the SharkFest conference in November. So if you want, you can go to the SharkFest conference. It will be a long talk, more than 1.5 hours. So this is the condensed version, just to give you an idea of what is happening. Who am I? I'm a software, open source software developer, okay? And I also teach at university. I contribute to various software applications, including Wireshark, Suricata, and so on. And today I'm going to talk about an open source library called NDPI. For those of you who have been here years ago, I made a presentation during the COVID days about this library. So today I'm going to focus on the fingerprinting part. Okay? The library is open source, so you can see the link here, you can download it. It's probably the only open source deep packet inspection library available today. And it runs more or less everywhere, from embedded system to big system. It can scale up to 100 and plus gigabit or to a small embedded device. And it not only contains DPI techniques, okay, but it also contains algorithms for doing traffic analysis, for data clustering, for something that today everybody calls AI, but it's probably not AI, it's like clustered or unsupervised AI, okay, unsupervised ML. So what is the topic today? Today I'm going to talk about network fingerprints. I'm going to give you an introduction to network fingerprints to explain what they are and what they are not, okay? And I'm going to differentiate between the initial flow fingerprint, so that is the topic of this talk, from other type about behavioral fingerprint. So let's start with the term. So the network fingerprint is a way to usually passively identify and gather specific properties of packets. You know that today the first question is, okay, but the traffic today is encrypted. Okay, encryption is an opportunity, I would say. It's not a problem. Of course, you cannot see the payload, but I think that's not bad. That's not really bad. If somebody uses encryption, there is a good reason for that, and I like that, okay? But the fact that you have encrypted payload, it means that you have encryption keys, you have other, let's say, properties that are useful and that you don't have with clear text traffic. The bug number one of internet today, of the internet today, is that everybody can inject a packet on the wire and the packet is accepted if it looks good. So you don't know exactly who is doing what. So the only way to know that, you have to put, you know, layer on top of layer, and then at the end you will have encryption keys, blah, blah, blah. It's a long story. I don't want to talk about that today. That allows me to say, okay, Luca has injected this traffic. So the term fingerprint, sometimes it uses a word that is about misuse, about unique, okay? Fingerprinting is not unique. It's a way to classify traffic. So if somebody is injecting a packet similar to a packet sent by somebody else, it's not true. So you have to trust the packet. Unfortunately, packet never lies is not true, because unfortunately, you can inject any packet to the wire, and you have to trust them. So this is what a fingerprint. And basically, you can use fingerprinting for various reasons. The first thing is, for instance, for labeling traffic. So you want to have a nice pie chart of the traffic flow in your network. Say, there is a lot of TLS, so there is a lot of streaming today, probably here at FOSDEM. And based on that, you can create some specific metrics. For instance, the round trip time is not great, or there are some loss on RDP. You can segment networks. So if you fingerprint the HTTP, the initial call, you say, okay, this is an old Windows machine. I don't want to see it on my network because it can be dangerous. Okay, so let's put it on a special VLAN. Okay, this is not a problem. Or otherwise, cybersecurity. If you see a device that is at the same time an Android machine, a Mac, or a Linux, there is something wrong. Either the fingerprint has a bug, probably not, or this device is allowing other people to come to the network, there are various virtual machines running on top of it, and anything that is not, let's say, standard. There are two ways of doing fingerprints. Today, I'm going to focus on the passive part. Passive means that you collect traffic, you look at the traffic, you create your own fingerprint, and you say, this is the fingerprint. Otherwise, there is the active fingerprint. So basically, you inject traffic on the network, and you try to collect information that you cannot collect with PASI. A simple example of that is, for instance, with TLS 1.3. Only the initial part of the negotiation, the client echo, is in clear text. Okay, it's becoming more and more encrypted, but it's in clear text. So you can decode it, let's say. Otherwise, the rest of the communication, for instance, the certificate or the server, hello, is encrypted. You cannot inspect it. So doing an active fingerprinting, like, for instance, Jarvis is doing, it's possible to somehow to fingerprint the server, even though the server is sending traffic that possibly cannot be analyzed. So advantage is advantage that passive is totally passive. Means nobody knows that you are doing that, okay? Unfortunately, there are some limitations. Those are the limitations I told you, okay, that are unfortunately present in modern protocol. There will be more and more limitations. So we have heard a lot about QUIC before. You will see that there are protocols like QUIC that, by design, are hiding information. And I said, this is great. I'm not saying it is bad. Okay? So there are various fingerprinting methods. The first method is about the protocol. So you want to fingerprint the protocol itself. So the HTTP remote desktop protocol, this type of things. Okay? Other methods don't look at the protocol, but look at the content. So for instance, if you see traffic towards Firefox settings services mozilla.com, probably somebody is using Firefox. So not only you fingerprint the environment, but you fingerprint the application. Okay? There are similar examples. You know, applications today are very chatty. They connect to various things, in particular mobile phones, Android and iOS are talking a lot. It's pretty easy to fingerprint them. Okay? And that's important. That's important also to give an idea of the user way in a passive way. So in real life, you can use it, for instance, for browser fingerprinting, if you want to make statistics. Policy enforcement, you can decide by device what type of things they can do or they cannot do, okay? Or for instance, you can prioritize the traffic. So let's say that is, if there is important traffic, like, streaming, this type of streaming, okay, I want to give this traffic a priority. I want to give less priority, let's say, to a file transfer, to a Dropbox update, because they can happen slowly. But this type of traffic, either it is fast, so it's reliable, it doesn't flicker, or people will not like it. Okay, that is the main thing. So we are not doing that for spying people, but there are good reasons in the network for doing that. If you want to create a fingerprint, okay, there are many tutorials that talk about that. It looks like, it's a fantastic, super complex thing, but it is not rocket science, I tell you, the fingerprint. So you basically have to take some specific attributes of the protocol you want to fingerprint or of the traffic you want to fingerprint, make sure that you ignore attributes that are not important or that are random. So for instance, in TLS, there is an extension called Grease. Okay? It has been put by that by Google. Okay? And you should ignore it because every communication has a different type of value. So if you simply take the payload, you create a hash, say this is the fingerprint, it's wrong. So you have to take the information that makes sense. So for instance, if you want to fingerprint a TLS communication, you should ignore the domain name or the host you are connecting to because it changes all the time. But I want to fingerprint the client. I don't want to fingerprint the traffic you're making. Okay? So I want to know whether you're using Mozilla, Firefox, or another application, or I want to know on a very specific network where it's super important that nothing has to change, like an industrial network where you make medicaments. So if you see that a fingerprint of a device has changed, you have to check whether somebody has updated the device or there is a problem on your plant. That's very important. Okay? So fingerprint is not just about curiosity. It's about making sure, without inspecting, going deep, that things are working as it should. Okay? That's very important. So it's not rocket science. For instance, this is an example of the fingerprint implemented by NDPI for the TCP stack. So we take some parameters that make sense. We try to make assumption on the usage. So we define them in ranges. For instance, the TTL, it's a typical example. So you cannot take the single value, okay? Because when you have hope, by hope, it can be decreased. So you have to take, for instance, ranges, not the exact value. And you create this string, okay? When you create this string, and then these are the example of the extension that we have put through NDPI in Wireshark, so you can see the fingerprint on it. You say, well, what can I do with this fingerprint? OK, what's the need beside the hash? OK, I'm going to show you that. So for instance, looking at the fingerprint, we can know interesting properties of the device. Let's have a look, for instance, at Apple. OK, everybody thinks, OK, I buy a device. It's made by the same manufacturer. It's the same. No, it's not true. So for instance, if you look at the operating system, that's interesting. Also, if we look at the TCP options, we can figure out whether this has been generated by an iPhone or an iPad. So you can restrict, for instance, the network, okay? Or you can say, okay, if I want to make my statistics, this is this type of device. Or for instance, you know exactly if it's a Windows machine, because a Windows machine does not use the timestamping option that is used by other operating systems. So you can, I mean, create families, okay? Not for sure say Windows 11, Windows 10. This is not possible. Honestly, it's not possible. But you can create families. You can decide whether certain things should happen or not happen, or to make statistics. That's the thing. And then, of course, if you see a Windows machine that is accessing a lot of Android sites or an iOS sites, there is a problem. There is something that doesn't work. Okay? And, of course, you can use that for protecting yourself. Let's take an example. There are two very high-speed scanners. One is MASCAN, the other one is ZMAP. So when you see packets coming to you, okay, and you see those packets, you immediately can realize that those packets are generated by somebody that's special. Okay, Sake doesn't have to answer. I know that you know the answer already. But anyway, there are no options. There are no TCP options on those packets because these guys are sending as fast as possible and wait for you to send something back. So if you see those packets, you can immediately say, I want to stop this guy. I don't have to go further in my communication because this guy is an attacker. So it's good for protecting yourself. This is what I mean, without going too deep. And of course, there are fingerprinting. That is probably this is the most popular one, okay, about TLS or QUIC. We have seen a lot about TLS and QUIC before. In this case, we are fingerprinting the library, the TLS, in part also the application sitting on top of it. The most popular one at the moment is called JA4, but unfortunately, it's a bit crazy because this one it's an update with respect to JA3 because JA3 is no longer really usable because it was based on the concept that you take a certain parameters of TLS, you put them in order, you create the hash. But recently, in 2013, I think, so some years ago, Google started to shuffle them just to avoid devices to be fingerprinting. So because of that, there are 2,000 fingerprints created out of the same device. So in essence, JA4 is sorting them and creating a fingerprint. But the point is that the guy who made it has created other type of fingerprints that are protected by a patent, so he wants to patent that. From a point of view, okay, from the open source standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. But it's also a crazy idea to patent, the jacket if it's red or blue or green, from a point of view. But anyway, that's my opinion. So if you look at the JA4, okay, you will see that it's divided in three parts, A, B, and C, okay? Let's forget A for a second. Let's take B and C. If you take B and C, inside the NDPI, we analyzed quite some traffic. So we have created this type of list. So I know, for instance, if a certain traffic has been created by Chrome or by another browser. Of course, this list will change because browsers are changing. So it's a constant update, it's a constant fight. But it's interesting to understand that data, to understand, for instance, if there is an extension that's potentially a problem, okay, you don't want a certain browser to run. This is an interesting thing. And of course, we have integrating our favorite tool, Wireshark, that can do that. We don't have a lot of time today, so I'm going to stop more or less here. So what I wanted to say is that inside NDPI, inside this library, there are various fingerprints about various protocols, from simple one, let's say a remote desktop, okay, or SSH, to more complicated ones. So the interesting one at the end of this talk that, again, I have no time to discuss them today. Again, go to the Wireshark conference retrospective. You can see the talk on the video. It's about encrypted or obfuscated traffic. So just to make this long story short, encryption makes traffic hard to understand. So theoretically, you should not be able to understand, right? But sometimes the traffic is encrypted twice, okay? Or it's over-encrypted, let's say, so it looks like random data. Okay, this is the type of information that is happening, this type of things that is happening. Oh, there are some specific VPN, like NordVPN, for instance. They are using special techniques to further obfuscate the traffic. Okay, this is an interesting thing. The DPI library is also able to understand the techniques used by Chinese government in the Great China Firewall. So we're also able to understand this type of things and to recognize this type of traffic, understand this type of techniques. Again, for protection, okay, not for attack. Final slide. We are organizing a conference that is somehow a mix between, you know, the community of Fromentum, the community from Wireshark meet in Zurich, in Switzerland, in May. There are some speakers here today that will also speak. So if some of you is willing to attend in Central Europe, that would be great. Thank you very much for being here today. Any questions?